Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win, exploring ideas to enhancing national competitiveness. My guest today is Steve Redburn, author of Creating a Strategic Approach to Budget Decisions and a contributor to the recent IBM Center book, Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches. So, Steve, what are some of the practical steps required to move toward a more strategic way of budgeting? And more specifically, would you elaborate on the new opportunities offered by the GPRA Modernization Act of 2010?
Right. This act, which builds on the earlier GPRA that I mentioned, codifies a lot of the innovations that were put in place in the previous administration, such as creating performance improvement officers in each of the major agencies and a council, it's called the PIC, the Performance Improvement Council, of those officers. They have also put into law many of the requirements and streamlined some of them for developing strategic plans and for agency performance plans and for setting targets at the agency level. But beyond that, and this is the most innovative, I think, an interesting opportunity offered by the new act that was passed at the end of 2010, is it requires the executive branch to define a limited set of federal priority goals that cut across jurisdictions, such as the one I mentioned that's a fairly low-level goal of dealing with environmental conditions in coastal wetlands, but also for reducing and eliminating homelessness among veterans, for example, is another goal that the Obama administration set at the beginning, which fits this model, where you have multiple agencies and programs all aimed at achieving that goal, and you plan together strategically to find the best strategy and drive improvement. The homelessness goal is a good one to look at because there's actual documented success there. There's a successful strategy that was identified in the previous administration and is being applied, which essentially is a housing-first strategy that takes people off the street, out of emergency shelters, who are chronically homeless, and puts them in a private apartment, links them with services, and helps stabilize them, and in some cases get them back into the economic mainstream. Very strong base of evidence that shows that that's cost-effective, that it roughly costs the same amount for government to keep people on the street and using emergency services and so on, getting in trouble with the law, as it does to use this alternative, which is much better for them. And allows you to see the possibility of reducing and ending that kind of homelessness, which is a blight on our cities and our society and very inhumane. So we see progress. We see we've seen a double-digit drop in the number of homeless veterans in the last annual count. So there's evidence that that strategy is working. It's an example of setting a goal that cuts across programs and agencies and then driving improvement by using resources more effectively to achieve that. And that's an opportunity that is now presented by the new act. And the administration has, in its latest budget proposals, identified a number of other similar goals around which it's going to organize reviews and then propose strategies and drive improvement. So that's the opportunity. And that fits very nicely with the model of the portfolio budgeting approach that I mentioned earlier.
You point out in your piece that OMB is given a stronger mandate to develop an annual government-wide performance plan and setting out the federal priority goals. Is that the high-performing goals maybe? Designating a lead official who's responsible. How can such a plan, that kind of annual performance plan, be the foundation for strategic budgeting?
Well, it forces you to think explicitly about what are priorities. And since we have a very limited pool of resources going forward and we're going to have to be in apparently in a prolonged period of budget austerity, we really do need to prioritize. The executive budget process has done that to some extent in the past, but it's never put down on paper across the whole budget very explicitly. These are the highest priority uses. These are our strategies. And under the old act, it was not required to do that as it interpreted it. So I think there's an opportunity here, and that by doing that in a very public way as the president presents his budget triggers a public debate, and we have the democratic process at work on those priorities, and Congress gets involved. And Congress really needs to be consulted as part of that priority-setting process, given the nature of our system. And they need to get more engaged than they have been in the past in all this approach, which I expect them to do.
Well, would you explain the benefits to those who lead the budget process in restructuring budget decisions around sort of enduring missions and long-term societal goals. What's the benefits of doing that?
Well, for any administration to succeed, they're going to have to use resources more strategically than they have in the past. It's a luxury that we can't afford any longer to keep putting money into spending programs that are less important, given our national purposes, or benefit only a narrow group, or just not efficient. I would look particularly at the tax expenditures, the more than $1 trillion worth of spending through the tax code in that regard, and at reforming the tax system as a whole to make it more efficient so that when we raise revenues, revenues actually go up and not just leak out through the holes in the bucket that are created by these special provisions. So that the advantage ultimately will be to put the economy back on track and increase its rate of performance.
So to actually realize the strategic approach to budgeting that you've outlined, I believe it requires its heavily emphasis is on analysis of costs and options and benefits. What institutions, maybe external to the government, could provide sort of technical and scientific assistance in doing this?
Okay. Well, I mentioned earlier that the states are pioneering some of this. I mentioned Washington State in particular. And the Pew Charitable Trusts are now replicating that with a group of other states. So that may become a general model at the state level that the federal government can look at. But within itself, the federal government has great analytical resources. The Congressional Budget Office is a product of the 1974 Budget Reform Act that is a marvelous institution that produces nonpartisan analysis of the highest quality, not just for Congress, but for the public and the Congressional Research Service. And within the executive branch, there are tremendous talents and analytical capacities in the agencies that should not be overlooked. But outside the government, Congress has chartered, back in the Lincoln administration, chartered the National Research Council or the National Academy of Sciences to advise on public policy questions based on the best scientific evidence. And that's what it does. It doesn't have a line in the budget. It's not a government agency. That's what it does. It does studies for the government and for the public that support this kind of analysis that we've been talking about. The National Academy of Public Administration, which has a similar charter, much newer organization, can be helpful in looking at how policy is implemented and very practically what works and how to make it work. So those two institutions are good examples, I think, of institutions already set up and chartered by Congress for this purpose. Many volunteers, the best scientific minds are brought together, the most experienced governing people to work on those kinds of problems. They could be tapped systematically for this kind of strategic review process.
Well, I want to switch to shared goals, and you've done a wonderful job illustrating them in some of your responses. But what new procedures for systematic consultation between the federal and state governments could be pursued to this end?
We used to have an advisory commission on intergovernmental relations, which had the analytical task of looking across the levels of government, and that was abolished, eliminated years ago. So we don't really have a working model for the kind of analysis that needs to be done, nor do we have formal consultation structures, at least in the budget context, for working across levels of government. So we really need to create something brand new. And I don't have an immediate answer for you on what that would look like. It will always be a consultative, cooperative, communicative kind of body because there's not going to be a formal combining of the budgets of the different levels of government. That's not in the cards constitutionally. But I mentioned the Recovery Act as a model for cooperation, and I think that kind of cooperation and communication should be fostered and would be very helpful so that the federal government and the states are not pulling in opposite directions, for example, when we're trying to stabilize and restore economic growth.
So to realize, again, the strategic approach to budget decision-making, to what extent does the Congress need to sort of revise or streamline its jurisdictional responsibilities? And would you elaborate on what that would look like if they were to do that?
Sure. Actually, later this summer, I expect the National Academy of Public Administration and the American Society of Public Administration will be releasing a series of memos on different aspects of public administration that will be made available to the campaigns and to a new congressional leadership for this electoral cycle. And part of that, which I'm working with others on, is addressed to exactly that set of questions we've been talking about, and in particular, we'll have recommendations for strengthening the congressional process. Mm-hmm. I think a key is strengthening the role of the budget committees as instruments of the leadership in the House and the Senate so that they can coordinate decisions, set priorities through that process so that the leadership can do that and be more strategic. So that's one key, is strengthening the budget committees. And then some people have suggested, and I think that ultimately this will have to happen, to streamline the work of the members of Congress who are just overloaded, to combine the authorizing and appropriations committees so that you have the capacity to build expertise, to build staff and so on in a particular policy area centered on a particular set of missions or objectives of the government that are enduring and operate much more effectively than we do now. And that would also bring together all of these elements in each portfolio that are now scattered across different committee jurisdictions. So ultimately, and I realize this would be a big political lift at any point, ultimately that's one suggestion. Alice Rivlin and others have suggested combining the authorizing and appropriations committees, and I think that would potentially help.
So all of this is not merely a technical or organizational change, but it really requires sort of a mental shift on how we operate. Would you elaborate on what such a shift would require?
And mentally, it means we have to start approaching the budget by looking longer term. So when we look at different parts of the budget, we have to look at the stream of benefits we're generating with each choice and the stream of costs, and do a current value analysis of that so that we can see whether it's a net contribution or a net minus or less effective than alternatives. And then at the entire budget level, we need to set some medium-term and long-term targets that will allow us to focus on how we stabilize the debt, and we have to hit those targets. So we need mechanisms to do that, which we've talked about. We need a longer view, both at the whole budget level and at the individual program or strategy level. And then we need a broader view, where we start by looking at the whole economy, and we look at what states and local governments are doing and others, and private investors, and we then ask what's the particular federal contribution that will help leverage the fastest gains toward whatever objectives are the highest priorities at the national level. So we need a broader view, and then we need a deeper view. We need to be more analytical in setting priorities. We need to use the best evidence as a basis for making decisions, and we have to organize the information around objectives so that we look at the whole portfolio at one time and, as I said, separate the wheat from the chaff and achieve budget savings, which we've got to have in order to sustain the long-term outlook.
So, Steve, as we peer into the future, how will we know when we have the kind of budget process we need? And what do you think the future looks like in terms of forging a strategic budgeting process?
Well, we'll know we're budgeting more strategically when we see resources flowing to higher priority and more productive uses. When we see, again, this is in the eye of the beholder to some extent, but we see things like the mortgage interest deduction and other lower priority uses of resources being eliminated in favor of things that have a high return, a high payoff, like investments in early childhood education and health that show they have a lifetime of benefit and bring people into the economic mainstream and restore the kinds of opportunities that people used to have throughout the society. So we'll see that, and then we'll see as a result the federal government contributing to faster economic growth. And that is, as I said, critical to stabilizing the budget, but also to all the other things that we want to achieve as a society. So that's how we'll know when we're succeeding.
Steve, that's a wonderful way to end our conversation today. I want to thank you for your time today and your insightful contribution to the recent IBM Center book, Governing to Win: Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches.
So it's my pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
My guest today has been Steve Redburn, Study Director at the National Academy of Science and contributor to Governing to Win: Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches. The book is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and from the publisher at romanlittlefield.com. This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win: Exploring Ideas to Enhancing National Competitiveness. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.